It's time for the best coverage of the top stories in sports. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page starts now.
Thank you, Chad Erickson. It does on this Wednesday. Good to have you with us. Sam Yarnell has the day off. We'll chat with Kurt Heelen of Pro Basketball Talk at NBCSports.com in about 20 minutes. Something to consider, some odds and ends. Did Fox really want to make a play to pay Caitlin Clark to stay in school just so they could air more of her games, get some of that Caitlin Clark money? What a crazy story. We live in interesting times, people. Let's talk some NFL to start the program today. Matt Verderam is here, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a while since I talked to this guy. Gives us a few minutes on the program today. Could you imagine that? And just for a second. I know that I didn't bring you on to talk about this. Could you imagine a sports network saying, we're going to do the NIL thing. We're going to pay an athlete to stay in school just because we want the dollars that come with her games being on our airwaves. I mean, that's nuts. It blows my mind.
It's something you wouldn't have thought about, you know,
five years ago.
10 years ago. I've never thought about that exact scenario, but I have thought about, you know, at what point do we get let's say Steph Curry Davidson, right? Yeah. Where Steph Curry was this unbelievable star at a small school.
Yes.
At what point does the school just go, hey man, listen, what do you want?
Yes.
We will pay you to stay here because you're worth it for us. And for people who think like, well, no, it wouldn't be worth it. The enrollment for these schools when they're really good in athletics is much higher. I should say the enrollment, but the applicants, the quality of students, they get more applicants, like massively so. And so to me, like, you get some, you know, Boise State was having their run years ago. Like, if you get a great athlete at a school like that, if I'm the school, I think about paying them. I mean, why not?
it's just mind-blowing. Talk to me about Russell Wilson here, because this seems to be the, you know, this saga that's sort of dragging out in this NFL offseason. Obviously, they're going to let him go. They're letting him talk with teams now. Right. Now we're starting to get everybody, you know, sort of glomming onto the idea that this is the worst trade in NFL history. And there will be time, I think, when we pull away from it to sort of, you know, peel that onion. But let's talk about the now when it comes to Russell Wilson and what seems to be the best fit for him when he does depart Denver.
So I don't know that it's the worst trade of all time, but it's in the top three. Right. I mean, it kind of has to be. The Deshaun Watson trade, I think, has it beat at this point. I mean, I guess the final ink isn't dry on that trade, but it looks like it's got it beat. And the Walker trade is an all-timer. But yeah, look, I think going forward, there are a lot of teams that make sense because he's going to play in all likelihood on the vet minimum. Like, he's going to make barely over $1 million for the next team. And I don't care what you say about Russell Wilson, that's a pretty good deal. So, you know, Atlanta is obviously in the mix for about every quarterback out there. The Steelers are a team that make a lot of sense. I would posit the team that if I had to put down $100 and say, I think this is the team he's going to go to, I look at the Raiders. The Raiders were one of the teams that were on his list years ago when he wanted out of Seattle. And they need a quarterback. Aiden O'Connell's not it. Jimmy Garoppolo, they could cut now for basically no penalty because he got himself suspended. I don't know if they're going to take a quarterback at 13. They can, but I don't know if they will. And so if I'm the Raiders, yeah, I'll pay $1 million to come in and be a bridge for the next guy. You know the division. I don't think he all of a sudden makes them like a playoff team. I don't believe that. But in their minds, they might look at him and say, hey, he makes us a lot better. And it's hard to argue he at least doesn't make him better. I mean, he's better than O'Connell and Garoppolo. So if I'm the Raiders, you know, I wouldn't hate that.
If SI's Matt Verderam, if SI's NFL insider Matt Verderam were running the Denver Broncos, what do you do at the quarterback position next year?
I would resign. So to me, here's the problem with all this. So the Broncos are going to be screwed cap wise for the next 2 years. I mean, there's just no way around that. They're eating $85 million dead cap. They're splitting it over the next two. Like, there's no world. Like, I've already seen people say, like, well, they should just sign Kirk Cousins. Like, with what money? Mm. Like, what money are they going to go out with? Are they going to give him $40 million next year? Like, I just don't know how they would do that financially. I'm doing one of two things. I'm either going out and signing, like, Ryan Tannehill and saying, look, man, I can afford to give you $10 million. Like, we'll do 2 and 20. We'll throw some incentives in there. Fine. Bring him in and stabilize this whole thing. Or, and I guess you could do both of these simultaneously. At pick 12, there was a lot of talk in Indy that they love Bo Nix. Like, I think Bo Nix is there because I think you're going to get the first three picks are going to be three quarterbacks. And then I think McCarthy is going to go somewhere before the Broncos. Although the Broncos could trade up for him and or could just get lucky and he's there at 12 and fine, you take him. I think Denver's got to invest in a young quarterback. If it were me to answer your question, I would draft a quarterback. Because it's, you know, the one thing that is a big difference from years ago, it's not prohibitive like it once was. Mm-hmm. If you were wrong before the rookie wage scale, you were screwed for years on end. I mean, you were locked into a ridiculous contract with a guy for 4 or 5 years. You're not anymore. So if I'm the Broncos, I'm like, look, I'll take my Bo Nix, or I'll take my J.J. McCarthy. And if I'm wrong, I mean, obviously it's not good, but I can move on after a couple of years. And then I can reset once all this dead money's gone.
If it doesn't go well, I mean, I just wonder how much of a tarnish. I only got 30 seconds here, so I got to be quick on this, and then we'll get you on the other side. How badly is Sean Payton's reputation damaged from what happened in this 1 year with Russell Wilson?
If they continue to lose, I think it's damaged in a way that I think it probably keeps him out of the Hall of Fame.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, because he's borderline. He's not a Hall of Famer right now. He needs to continue. But if they win, if they come back and they win a couple division titles under him, maybe get to a Super Bowl at some point, then, like, I don't think it really matters.
How on earth is he borderline, though, but Tony Dungy gets in? Tony Dungy won one Super Bowl, too, and he won it with the, arguably one of the greatest quarterbacks of his generation. Like, it's just doesn't make sense
Tony
to
Dungy
me.
Was a trailblazer. Yeah. Sean Payton is not.
We're going to stick around. We're gonna have Matt Verderam on for one more segment with us. We'll come back and chew some things up as we continue Wednesday edition of Sports Wrap.
Over 13 million Americans were affected by identity theft in 2022, and the threats go way beyond just credit card fraud. Today's identity thieves can use your information in ways that are easy to miss by just monitoring accounts and credit, like opening loans, transferring home titles, even committing crimes.
Someone got my Social Security number, made a driver's license, and was used for criminal activity.
You can do so much with a Social Security number that I didn't know could happen. They drained my bank account. It was terrifying.
You're even more vulnerable than you realize. Your information is exposed through online shopping, banking, even corporate data breaches. No wonder there's a new victim of identity theft every 3 seconds. Only LifeLock alerts you to the widest volume of threats all in one place, like someone trying to use your Social Security number, open a new loan in your name, or even commit a crime in your name.
There was a big yes button, and there was a big no button. I clicked, that's not me, and LifeLock took it from there.
If you become a victim of identity theft, a dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will be assigned to your case and work to fix the issue on your behalf.
If something happens, you have somebody fighting for you.
All LifeLock members are backed by the LifeLock $1 Million Protection Package, including reimbursement for stolen funds, personal expenses, and coverage for lawyers and experts up to $1 million. It can be dangerously easy to steal your identity. With LifeLock, it's easy to help protect yourself.
I will be with LifeLock forever.
Join the millions of people already protected by LifeLock. And for a limited time, save 25% on your first year with promo code 25TV. All plans include a 60-day money-back guarantee. Call 800-710-7531 or visit LifeLock.com/25TV to save 25% on your first year of identity theft protection. Enroll now.
You learn pretty fast that there are no shortcuts in racing or in life. One of my first attempts to deal with my own hair loss was a literal shortcut. Thankfully, my wife found Hair Club. I was shocked that Hair Club had virtually every solution possible. If I had known about Hair Club sooner, I never would have tried any of those overhyped advertised solutions. You can get your own free personalized consultation with a hair loss expert and be on your way to the finish line in no time.
Scan the code on your screen now to schedule a free consultation and save 20% on select solutions using promo code Frankie.
We continue on this Wednesday edition of the show. Now, we were slated to have Matt Verderam back for a second segment, as we told you at the end of the first segment. We had some technical difficulties, so we're not going to be able to continue that conversation with Matt Verderam. However, for those that may have missed it yesterday, Patrick McEnroe from ESPN also recently did the Netflix Slam, joined us on the program to talk about tennis. The biggest tennis tournament in the world outside of the four majors is being held here over the next couple of weeks in the greater Palm Springs, California area. It's the BNP Paribas, and it features the world's greatest players coming to this area to take part in this tournament. We talked about that with Patrick McEnroe, also talked a bit about some of the best players in the world in tennis right now. Here's that conversation. Maybe Miami. And I mean, those are your best events, really, of the tennis season. Let's get into it a little bit here and talk about this field for BNP Paribas, which is the best it's been in a few years.
Well, the field is phenomenal. And now you got Djokovic back, which is great. You know, hopefully Rafa can make a little bit of a run. But, you know, the players love coming out there to the desert. I'll be out there as well. You know, the women's field is incredibly strong. Swiatek's the top seed. You got Sabalenka, of course, who backed up her win in Australia with a second major title. Coco Gauff has been a little shaky this year, so we'll see how she looks. She'll be the three seed out there. It's a great event. It's, as I said, fan-friendly. People love it. And it's sort of like the second official start of this, you know, the tennis calendar year. You've got Australia, obviously the first major of the year. But for a lot of Americans and American fans, you know, this is like, okay, tennis season is starting. It's just an early March. Springtime is right around the corner. And, of course, out there where you live, Jason, it's always springtime out there in the desert.
Yep. I got a bit of an interesting question for you, though. Just thinking aloud here while I was hearing you talk about just how great this event is out here. Why is it that other tennis markets or other cities or other events that are held in the U.S. can't capture that sort of magic that you get with BNP Paribas or Miami? And I know those fields are bigger and the events are a little bit longer. Why can't other U.S. cities sort of capture that magic?
Well, first of all, as you said, the field does matter. So you're guaranteed to get all the top players in the world, which was, you know, brilliant move years ago by the ATP Tour to start these types of events now called Masters 1000, where they basically all the top players have to play. And for the most part, you know, want to play because, as you said, they're the biggest events outside the majors. You've got the springtime. You've got a destination in Palm Springs, which is where, you know, people love to go there, particularly this time of year, whether they're snowbirds like me. Where the, you know, tons of people from the West Coast, all up and down the West Coast, a lot of people from the northern part of the country, from Portland, from Seattle, come down. It's a pretty quick trip. And, of course, a lot of people from, you know, a huge city like L.A., San Francisco. So you've got a lot of people that come for a couple of days. You've got a lot of people from my part of the world in the East Coast that will go out there for 3-4 days because it's a great, you know, break. And because it's not as crazy as the U.S. Open, right? As far as, you know, the hecticness of what New York is and what the U.S. Open is, it's almost like a more relaxed version of that, you know, and the grounds are spectacular, the stadium courts and the weather. So I think you put all those things together. You know, Miami's changed a bit over the years. It's now the Miami Open at the Hard Rock Stadium. It used to be, of course, in Key Biscayne when it was that was a little bit more of a destination event. Now it's kind of a little more of a city event, which is, it's still quite successful. And obviously you've got a lot of South Americans that love to come there as well. But I think, you know, all the different reasons for this tournament in the California desert being successful, time of year, facilities, players, et cetera, and it's like the perfect storm for a tournament.
All right, Jannik Sinner, his ascension to number two in the rankings. A little more fuel for the fire for Carlos Alcaraz?
Well, he's not number two. He's number three or four.
Sorry, three. Okay.
That's okay. Yeah, but he's right there. I mean, he's played like he's the number one, by the way.
He certainly has.
For the last 6 months, you know, since the U.S. Open, had a great finish to last year, beat Djokovic indoors a couple of times, including in the Davis Cup final.
I mean, is he the second best player in the world right now in your mind?
Yes, I think he is. He might even be the first best because he destroyed Djokovic. I mean, obviously not over the course of the last, you know, year.
Right.
So that's
saying right now.
But right now, I think I put him at number one right now.
Wow.
Now, these next two events will have a lot to determine, you know, what it looks like going into the clay court season. But he's, you know, to me, one of the favorites. Obviously, Djokovic wasn't completely himself in that Australian Open match that they played. But you got to give it to Sinner. I mean, he just totally dominated, had a great game plan, and then comes from two sets down against Medvedev, who, by the way, played amazing in that final when he was running on fumes right from the start. And he's continued to play very well the last couple of weeks. And he likes playing in the desert, got to the final last year. Alcaraz is the guy that's got the biggest question mark at the moment of the top four guys. You know, Djokovic, you know, he's going to be ready to go. Sinner is going to be rock solid. Medvedev is his. Alcaraz is the guy out of the top four. And by the way, they've distanced themselves now, those top four. You know, Tsitsipas is out of the top 10. Zverev, okay, he's in the mix. He had a good win, really good win over Alcaraz, but he's been a bit up and down since then. He's kind of playing his way back to where he's top five, top six kind of guy. But I think those top four guys at the moment have distanced themselves from the field, which is not easy to do in men's tennis.
Last one on Djokovic, save the best for last, obviously, with the top-ranked player in the world right now. What it means, one, to have him back on American soil, playing tennis in front of American crowds, but also to go back to his loss to Sinner. Was that the first time you kind of felt like, okay, the decline might be starting to come for Novak Djokovic?
You know, I'm not ready to say that yet, but it was the first time in a long time, maybe the first time ever, where he was really pretty flat, you know, in a big match. I mean, he's been the best big match player throughout the course of his career. You know, comebacks against Roger, Wimbledon, at the U.S. Open, you know, toe-to-toe with Nadal at the French, you know, the epic one in Australia. So, I mean, you can go down the list. I mean, he always delivers. He doesn't always win in the big matches, but that was the first one where we're like, yeah, you know, for him, he really didn't show up in that match. So that to me am I going to call it a red flag? I'm going to call it a yellow flag.
That is Patrick McEnroe. Patrick, look forward to seeing you out here at BMP, my friend.
I will remember, Jason, to bring my sunscreen, okay?
Yes, please bring your sunscreen. If you look at me and I take all this powder off, I'll be in a world of trouble. Thank you, my friend.
You got it. Have a good one.
We're coming back. Don't go anywhere. We roll along on this Wednesday edition of the show. Thank you again to Matt Verderam for hanging out with us from SI.com, their NFL insider. Check out that new podcast he was pimping at the end of our second segment. Something to consider coming up in about 20 minutes, but right now, time to talk some NBA. With my man, Kurt Heelan of Pro Basketball Talk at NBCSports.com, who's kind enough to hang out with us for a couple of segments on the show today. Sam Yarnell has the day off. Kurt, is Luka Doncic right now, in your mind, I know what Jokic is doing,
yeah,
and all of that is great. But to me right now, if I were a betting man and I wanted to go somewhere other than Nikola Jokic, it feels like Luka Doncic is the guy you're going with, isn't it?
No, actually, what? I'd be going with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
No, come honestly. On. Nobody cares about SGA outside Oklahoma City.
Yeah, they will. In fact, you can read about him tomorrow at NBC Sports on Thursday. But like that, throw on the plug in there. But that's not the point. Honestly, like he is in the mix. And then both Giannis, who's out right now, so it's slowed down a little. But I think Doncic in particular over the last few weeks has really upped his profile in this race, carrying this team. If anything, what hurts him a little bit is just they haven't been that good. Like, they are still, you know, they're not a top three seed right now. They're not one of the top four seeds in the West. They're in that second tier. That said, his play has been otherworldly of late. Yes, he has pulled himself into the conversation for MVP. I just don't know that he's going to be able to overcome where the team is and where, look, it's a season-long award. It's great to sprint to the finish. Sprinting to the finish won Joel Embiid the award last year. But if you're too far back, man, it doesn't matter how fast you sprint to the finish. You can't catch the guys in front.
But let me ask you something. If we're going by the literal term, okay, the contextualist term of most valuable player, there isn't a guy. I mean, maybe Embiid, and I know Embiid's not going to play enough games, so we're not going to have that conversation.
Yeah,
but to me, if you take Doncic off that team right now, that they're a 30-win team. I mean, it is that. I mean, I don't know if there is a bigger win-loss difference in a team if you take a guy off than Doncic.
Yo, that's always been part of Jokic's strength, by the way. It's just the on-off numbers for him is ridiculous because they might as well have a high school center playing behind him half the time. Like it's that. I think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has that same argument. He is a 25-year-old carrying lesser players a long way. Same with Doncic, though. That's, I think, what mostly hurts. People have been making the Jason Tatum case lately, probably not after that loss to the Cavaliers last night, but the best player, best team, do you guys know how good Jason Tatum is? Look, Jason Tatum is very good. Jason Tatum may be hoisting the NBA trophy, the most valuable player in the finals, and then go win an Olympic gold this summer, but he's got so much around him that value proposition goes down, right? Like they can win without him in a way that the Mavs don't win without Doncic, right?
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying there. And you know, Jokic is, I know what you're talking about with the on-off numbers with him as well. Yeah. You mentioned that crazy finish last night, or you mentioned the Celtics. You had that crazy finish last night, which is about the only thing that could stop the Celtics right now, who just feel like they are the top tier. I know everybody's going to want to say, well, you know, cruise control, Denver's kind of pacing themselves, but the Celtics are just playing at an all-world level right now.
The lead, they are on top of my power rankings today, and I just wrote the lead. They feel inevitable, right? Which didn't work out well for Thanos, I guess. So, like, maybe that's not the best analogy, but they do. Right now, they rule out five guys who can defend. There are always guys on the floor who can defend and switch. There's not weak links out there until you get kind of deep into their bench. More importantly, there are always five shooters on the floor. Mm. Especially with Porzingis, but even Horford can fill that role, even though he's not the same guy. So you can't just, I got to double this guy and handle. You're quickly in rotations and chasing out to guys who can knock down threes. And just as a strategy technique, by the way, don't sag off Jaylen Brown because he'll hit them.
Yeah, he has been something else. Let me ask you about the Knicks for a second. How much more can this team endure with all the injuries? Now, I know they're on the verge of getting back Randall, on the verge of getting back in an Obi, and it's just supposedly a knee contusion for Jalen Brunson. Can the Knicks hang in here, or are they going to wind up being a play-in team at this point?
I don't think that they play so hard. I don't think they're going to fall back that far, but again, it's a real cluster right in the middle of the East, so they've got to find some wins. They've got to get those guys back. If they get all those guys back, they have that Miami Heat potential from last year. Again, Boston's Boston, but the team nobody's really picking the team that can make a deep run because they defend, because Brunson can make plays, because they've got depth, and now they've got, I mean, Ananobi's hand and glove fit with their defense and everything they want to do. That's a team that can be a dangerous run. Like, nobody wants to play them in the East, and so they've just got to get back healthy. I think they can endure it, though. I still think they're going to be a top six team.
Talk about Cleveland, who they beat over the weekend, and Donovan Mitchell. And this knee issue, you know, you had the PRP injections, all this stuff. You've got to start wondering if, you know, not that this injury doesn't just sink the season, but it sinks the direction of the Cavaliers because, as you and I have discussed and you've alluded to, there's not a deep playoff run here. There's a good chance he bolts. So this knee injury is not just game-changing in terms of this season. It could be franchise-altering when you think about the direction of the Cavaliers.
Well, they've got Dean Wade. They don't need him. No. You're spot on. Like, if this team doesn't make a deep playoff run, he is up, for people who don't know, he has 1 year left on his deal. He's a player option. He's got 1 year left on his deal. He's either going to extend or they're going to have to trade him or risk losing him for nothing. They can't do that. So it really comes down to this season. And if they get bounced in the first round again, that's very much on the table. They are also one of those teams, though, capable of playing in the conference finals. And then he decides, I kind of like it here. I like this team. I think we can do things. I'm going to take the most money. Kind of is always on the table. And so that's there. It really, so much is going to come down to, I think, this playoff run for them. And then ultimately how he feels about his place there in Cleveland.
Kurt Halen is hanging out with us, pro basketball talk at NBCSports.com. He's got a piece coming out on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, which is why he's saying he's an MVP candidate above Luka Doncic. That's the real reason, isn't it?
Yes, I'm all about pimping.
Yeah, we're coming back. We're going to talk with him some more. Get into the Western Conference a bit as well. I'm Jason Page. Sports Wrap continues on this Wednesday.
You learn pretty fast that there are no shortcuts in racing or in life. One of my first attempts to deal with my own hair loss was a literal shortcut. Thankfully, my wife found Hair Club. I was shocked that Hair Club had virtually every solution possible. If I had known about Hair Club sooner, I never would have tried any of those overhyped advertised solutions. You can get your own free personalized consultation with a hair loss expert and be on your way to the finish line in no time.
Scan the code on your screen now to schedule a free consultation and save 20% on select solutions using promo code Frankie.
All right, something to consider coming up in about 10 minutes. Nick Saban, one of the real reasons he left college football. We'll get into that. Hanging out with Kurt Halen of Pro Basketball Talk at NBCSports.com. We were all gung-ho about the Clippers for a while, and now all of a sudden they've kind of come back down to earth. Is it just, I mean, look, sometimes I tend to believe that it's just the ebb and flow of an 82-game NBA season. I will still say that, in my opinion, outside of the Denver Nuggets in the West, I still think they're the most dangerous team. The youth and inexperience of Oklahoma City plays into it, and I still don't believe in Minnesota. To me, it's still the Clippers, you know, as the biggest threat to Denver in the West. Is it just the ebb and flow of the season, or is there something in particular you see, Kurt, with that trained eye of yours, that tells you we should be concerned about the Clippers?
No, we should be concerned. I'm with you. I've spent the entire season trying to come up with reasons it wasn't going to be Denver versus Boston, but yeah, here we are. Yeah, it's the problem is this. What we're seeing right now from Denver and Boston, outside of losses on Tuesday, we're like, these teams are gearing up. You can see them playing their best basketball. You can see the level of execution, the level of intensity, the level of focus starting to really come in. And then there's the Clippers, who are not playing. It's not just a talent thing. They aren't playing as fast as they were before. And now they're without Russell Westbrook for a while. And he was one of the guys, you know, maybe probably most of the rest of the regular season, he was one of the guys who did play fast for them, who did push the tempo off the bench. They're just kind of playing, look, man, James Harden likes to play slow and survey the system and survey everything, even if he's going to pass. Like, Kawhi Leonard will pound the rock and wait for the defense, and Paul George can get sucked into that. And they're back into that mode. They're not playing fast. They're not playing off each other the same way. And they're not building good habits. This is not a team you're watching thinking, man, they're getting better. You can see where this goes. Maybe they can flip the switch, like, because they're veterans. But I struggle with teams that try to do that haven't done it all. Hey, man, if Denver wants to flip the switch, great. If the Kobe Shaq Lakers want to flip the switch, great. This ain't the Kobe Shaq Lakers, man. And they need to execute better. You know, so, yeah, I have the same concerns. OKC's too young and a little too small, frankly. They get pushed around it too easily. Minnesota's clutch numbers are painful. I still think the Clippers, I'm with you, they are the most dangerous team to Denver in the West, but I believe in them less than I did 3 weeks ago.
The Suns? If I give you the Suns, the Lakers, or the Warriors, the team that you think has a chance to actually make a deep run into the postseason, if any of them?
It's hard. Here's where you're really putting me on a limb. It's going to be all about matchups in the West, because certain teams, Minnesota matches up pretty well with the Lakers because they can match their size and physicality. Oklahoma City doesn't. We saw that Monday night. Oklahoma City just kind of gets pushed around by a bigger Lakers team. So it's really going to come down to matchups. I still think of that group, though, I will take the Suns because of Kevin Durant. Because they can overwhelm you with offense once they get Booker back healthy, once with Beal, with Durant. They've also got guys who've proven they can do it in that moment with Durant. That said, I'm not sure I believe in any of them.
Really?
Like, you get one good matchup, they can get around, but I don't think any of them get out of, to the conference finals.
But win a series.
Win a series, I think any of them can. Because
that could come at the expense of a Minnesota or an Oklahoma City.
If Golden State gets Minnesota, suddenly all that shooting and spacing is a problem, and they've got Draymond who can body up the bigs a little bit, and suddenly, you know, we've seen Rudy Gobert lose a series because he got pulled out of paint, you know, and frankly, he's probably playing a little better than he did at that point, but I can see Golden State pulling that off. I can certainly see Durant winning a series. I can see the Lakers, but it comes down to matchups. I don't think those teams are good enough to win two series.
Let me do my obligatory Victor Wembanyama question to you. It feels like something has shifted in terms of his leadership now and sort of taking ownership of that franchise from a player standpoint. Is that imaginary or is it real?
No, I think it's real because I think he stepped into a void there. They didn't really have that guy, right? I mean, obviously it's Popovich's team, but they don't have that Tim Duncan's kind of an all-time example, but they didn't have, you know, one of those locker room leaders. They didn't bring in a cagey veteran to be that guy at the end of the bench. They're Udonis Haslam, you know, Jared Dudley kind of guy. And I think he has filled that, and he's really competitive. And it pushes them a little bit, doesn't it, Jason? Because hey, man, we got like 3 years. We're going to figure this out. We're going to get this group that's going to grow organically together. No, man, you got to start doing it pretty fast because he expects to win now.
But at the same time, and I just want to close on this, can we just enjoy what he is here in his rookie season? Because there is this conversation of, oh, they better go get talent to surround him with, and they better go do this, or, you know, just got there, for the love of God. It almost feels like there's already this trepidation of, well, are they going to be able to keep him? He's in his rookie season. Can we just enjoy what this guy has been in his rookie season?
I'm with you. I'm a big believer in he's just fun to watch. And the stuff he does, once or twice a game, you turn into a Tex Winter cartoon where your jaw just drops all the way to the floor and you're shocked by the whole thing. I love watching him play. I think there's a little more pressure on them to do it fast, but the idea that he would leave is not going to happen.
No.
Not going to happen on a rookie contract. Remember, by the way, he wanted to be in San Antonio.
Yeah. Kurt, always appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Take care.
Do you use Viagra or Cialis? Have you been thinking about trying Viagra or Cialis? What if we can promise you the same results for less than $3 a pill? If you're paying $20 or more a pill for Viagra, you're getting taken to the cleaners. Our pill delivers the exact same results for less than $3. We'll do the math for you. You'll save more than $16 a pill for the same results. Want more? We'll give you 40 blue pills or 40 yellow pills for $99 and add 4 more pills free. You save more than $500. Stop overpaying for expensive prescriptions. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to know what to do next. You need to call now and get your 44 pills for just $99. Stop overpaying for Viagra. Call us anytime, day or night, and start saving big money for the exact same results. Have your credit card ready. Ordering is fast and easy, with your pills delivered to your door in a non-marked package. Call now.
Welcome back to this Wednesday edition of the show. Thanks again to Kurt Heelan for dropping by. Pro Basketball Talk at NBCSports.com. Go there tomorrow for his piece on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I'll still take Luka Doncic over SGA when it comes to a potential alternative for MVP not named Nikola Jokic. All that being said, time for something to consider. Something to consider why Nick Saban actually retired after his historic run as the head coach at Alabama. There's been a lot of conversation when he walked away and decided to retire about why. And he gave, you know, this word salad talking about why or why he may have decided to walk away when he did. But as time goes on, you start to get more of the rationale and more of the reason why Nick Saban started to run away. Nick Bromberg, writing for Yahoo Sports, my old buddy Nick over there, said that part of the reason, not all of it, but that part of the reason why Saban decided now was the time was the way his players reacted after that loss against Michigan in the Rose Bowl. And he's quoted in this story from ESPN as saying the following: "I want to be clear that wasn't the reason, but some of those events certainly contributed," he said of his decision to retire. "I was really disappointed in the way that the players acted after the game. You got to win with class, you got to lose with class," he said. "We had our opportunities to win the game and we didn't do it. And then showing your butt," I'll use that word, "and being frustrated and throwing helmets and doing that stuff, that's not who we are and what we've promoted in our program." But here's the problem with that. When college sports starts to become basically a wing of professional football, which is, I mean, there's no getting around it at this point. College football is no longer just amateur football. College football, and look, it had been this way for a while, but now it's almost been codified with NIL, the transfer portal, which is akin to free agency. College football is basically professional football at this point. You've got a 12-team playoff now. Think of what college football was just 20 years ago and what the sport has evolved into now. It is just another form of professional football. Yes, it's amateurism for if you're talking about FCS and you're talking about Division II and Division III. And even some of those Division II guys wind up making it into the NFL at some point. But Nick Saban is upset about the results of a product that he helped create. And I'm not saying he's at fault when I say that. But I think it's a little short-sighted for Nick Saban or anybody else to think that college football was just always going to remain this traditional amateur bastion of athletics. It's been trending in a direction that you're going to get more and more of a professional-minded college football player. And those guys are going to just behave differently. It's just, it is a different game now than when Nick Saban got into it a zillion years ago. And maybe it is a good thing that he decided to retire. Maybe it is a good thing that he decided to walk away now. And by the way, before Saban talks about winning with class and losing with class and all that stuff, I'd just say look at your screen right now. Oh, that looks like a classy dude. That's a classy guy on the sideline, huh? Oh, it's just a coach being a coach. Taryn Lane Kiffin, a new you-know-what? Oh, yeah, because Nick Saban's, oh, yeah, throw down that headset. That is just, I mean, it's kind of laughable in a way, isn't it? when you see Nick Saban and these antics on the sideline and then complaining, I don't like the way my players behave. So you can do it, but they can't. What a joke. Speaking of joke, and maybe this isn't a joke. We talked about it earlier in the show briefly with Matt Verderan. This story that's out there, Awful Announcing had it, but I think it might have been John Orand who is the original person to report on it. John Orand at Puck has a new report that there was at least an idea for one specific NIL deal for Iowa star Caitlin Clark, where Fox Sports, the network, you know, the network you all know and love, that Fox was going to pay Caitlin Clark to stay in school so that she could help to continue to boost their ratings. This is the quote from the story. Clark is such ratings gold, in fact, Fox executives contemplated reaching out to other networks to see if they could come up with an enticing NIL offer that would convince her to stay in the college ranks for one more year. Alas, talks never materialized, nobody ever approached Clark, and ended before they could get going last week when she announced she was going to the WNBA next season. She is obviously the favorite to be the top pick. Not a dumb move by Fox or any other network who was thinking about it, though. And quite honestly, I'm not, you know, shocked she went to the WNBA, but at the same time, there's a lot of NIL money for her to make. And the WNBA will be there in another year. And it almost makes you wonder if she had, you know, if she doesn't win a national championship with Iowa this year, which is obviously a possibility given how South Carolina is so good. Great. Is she going to regret not getting that college championship? We're coming back. We continue on this Wednesday edition of the show before we get to odds and ends. A reminder, if you miss anything from Sports Rep, maybe the show isn't carried every day on the affiliate you watch us on. Maybe it's only carried on the weekends. Maybe it's only carried on the weekdays. Sometimes some stations carry it 2 or 3 days a week. You can get all of the content from the show on the Sports Rap with Jason Page podcast, or vodcast as it would be. It is available on Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, anywhere you get your podcasts. Go and download the Sports Rap with Jason Page podcast. In the case of Spotify, you can watch the shows there. It is fantastic. Make sure to do that. All right, without any further delay, time for odds and ends. Odds and ends, Live Golf, the end of their quest for the official world golf rankings points they so desperately were craving. And they hammered away, and they hammered away, and they tried to get into a room with Peter Dawson and tried to get the Live Golf sort of structure involved in the official world golf rankings. And the world golf rankings said no. We're not going to allow you to get points playing this structure of a tournament. Now you had Greg Norman yesterday send a letter to the players from Live Golf saying, hey, we're not going to be able to get these points. We're going to have to figure out a different way. Now you've got players, obviously, that are speaking out. John Rahm, who is obviously one of the biggest stars of Live, got the big $300 million, reportedly this $300 million deal to join Live. He has come out and said the world golf rankings are obsolete. Now, he may or may not be right, but ultimately, you do have to start to ask the question, is it sour grapes from the Live golfers about the fact that they're just being left out? And, I mean, look, here's the way I'm looking at this now. My sort of inhale-exhale view, take a deep breath, and try and take the geopolitical aspect of Live Golf out of the equation. These guys made a decision, knowing full well that the official world golf rankings could be out of play for them. and that it could take them out of the majors unless the majors decide to figure out their own criteria by which to invite live golfers outside of guys like Rahm who have already won the Masters, obviously. They're getting huge paydays. So you have to ask yourself, was it worth it? I mean, from a dollars and cents standpoint, for a lot of these guys, it's probably worth it to miss out on the majors. You know, you decided that winning tournaments and competing and having everybody playing against each other on the best stage in the world didn't really matter anymore because what LIV Golf was offering was this transformative kind of money. Well, if that's the decision you make, then one of the drawbacks of that is you're going to lose out on those world golf ranking points. And we live in this world today, we live in this era, this age, where whenever somebody doesn't like anything, they just say, well, it's fake. It doesn't matter. It's not real. It's obsolete. You see it in our politics every day. And now that's what you're getting from a lot of these guys that are being excluded from the world golf rankings points by saying, well, it just doesn't count. It's not real. It doesn't matter. It's outdated. Well, the fact of the matter is, you know who's not complaining by and large about the world golf rankings? The guys on the PGA Tour who stayed. And yeah, they're making a lot less money than the guys on LIV. A lot less money in a lot of cases. But they get those world golf ranking points. And they get to play in the majors, whether they won one or not, as long as they qualify by whatever the crazy criteria is to get those world golf ranking points. Is what it is. Odds and ends, Arch Manning. He will not be in EA Sports college football game this year. While a lot of guys have jumped up and said, hey, we'll take whatever the $500 that EA Sports was offering to the guys that decided to play or decided to allow their name, image, and likeness to be in the game. Arch Manning? Nope. Said, I'm not going in. Now, he's doing it under the guise of saying, well, I'm not the real designated starting quarterback at Texas yet. So I don't want to be in it for that reason. But we all know what the real reason is. Arch Manning is protecting his brand. Remember when he was Archie Manning in high school? Now he's Arch Manning. This is all about building a brand for Arch Manning. And I talked about this on the show yesterday. We've talked about it in days past. I've brought this up. Players, athletes at the high school level are already building their brands for when they get to college. And by the time they get to the NFL, and especially in the case of a guy like Arch Manning, assuming he gets to the NFL someday, that brand won't just already be built. It wouldn't have already been nurtured. It will be flat out polished by the time he gets to the NFL. Is he being a bit of a diva, as some like to say? I don't know if that's necessarily the case. He's going to decide where his name, image, and likeness is used. $500 is not a heck of a lot of money to a guy like Arch Manning, who's going to have the opportunity potentially to make millions in an NFL career at some point. But for now, he will not be in the EA Sports game. And that's how we wrap up this Wednesday edition of the show. Sam Yarnell had the day off today. Don't worry, he'll be back tomorrow. He was on assignment today. We have to get back into our MLB previews. We'll do that tomorrow on the show. Thank you to our guests, Kurt Heelan of Pro Basketball Talk at NBCSports.com and Matt Verderam over at SI. I'm Jason Page. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday edition of Sports Wrap. We'll see you back here on Thursday.